I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Welcome into the Jazz Notes Podcast. I'm your host, Ben Anderson. You can read me at kslsports.com. Find me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. And as always, find from the Deseret News, where you can read her. You can also find her on Twitter at NBA Sarah. It is, of course, Sarah Todd. Sarah, thanks for jumping on again.
No problem. Happy to be here. Happy to be back in Salt Lake City.
Yeah, you were traveling. You did the four-game road trip, which was shockingly fruitful for the Utah Jazz.
Yeah, it was a long trip, but it was shockingly fruitful. I'm surprised that the Boston win was very good, but then to win that back-to-back in Detroit was also very good for them.
Yeah, so it's been funny looking at the teams that they played on this road trip, because if you look and you said, well, they played the Knicks and they played the Cavs and they played the Pistons, and those are three of the, you know, absolute worst teams, not just in the Eastern Conference, but in the NBA, that was successful. And then you look at how Boston's been playing. They've just been atrocious. They've lost, what, four games in a row? And they're blowing leads in the fourth quarter. They've lost two games in the last of their last four where they had the ball and a lead with less than 10 seconds to go, and they lost those games, including last night.
Yeah, the only good one they won was against the Cavs, like right before they played.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. So they're not playing well either, which made me think, you know what? Maybe that Cavs win might be the Jazz' best win on this road trip, because the Cavs beat Denver. The Cavs, you know, almost beat Boston. They've been playing really tough. They've been beating some good teams, and the Jazz struggled with them for a stretch in the second quarter, but really kind of held them off. I mean, I know it got close again in the fourth, but there was actually some decent wins there, and even the Knicks beat the Houston Rockets. Now, the Rockets have been terrible as well, but, you know, I actually think the Jazz, despite playing some terrible teams, should be pretty happy with the victories they got, because you could have slipped up any one of those nights. And we're seeing a lot of teams right now slip up, which is why the Jazz, at five games, have the longest win streak in the NBA currently.
Yeah, and it's very easy to go into, like, one of the bottom-dwelling teams in the league and play them when they're coming off confidence games like that. Like you said, like the Knicks beat the Rockets. Like, there was a total chance that they could have come in and, like, you know, played their tails off and actually beat the Jazz. But I know we've been talking about it, writing about it all week, but the defense looks like it really actually has turned around. And whether or not that's sustainable against some of the better teams, we're about to find out. But it does look better, even against the bad teams.
Yeah. And you know what? Detroit, you played them on the second night of a back-to-back in the last game of a four-game road trip, which is always tricky. And Detroit hadn't played since Wednesday. And the Jazz played Friday and then Saturday. So they had a lot of time to prepare for them. So it's not surprising that Detroit played as well as they did. But a nice win, a nice victory for the Jazz. And then to win four straight, or I should say five straight, including four straight on the road. And I think they've won six in a row on the road now overall. That's, you know, they're a good team. It is funny for how much panic there has been for Jazz fans this season to look at where they are in the standings, to realize they're two games back of the Clippers. And the Clippers are still favorites to win the championship, you know, by a lot of outlets. So for the Jazz to be only two games back of them and a game back of the Denver Nuggets is a testament to, when this team is playing well, that they're certainly capable of playing at an extremely high level. And I think we've seen that enough recently and really throughout the season that the Jazz fans should feel some confidence as they go into the playoffs. And look, I mean, the Lakers are playing great right now, and we saw them beat Milwaukee, and we saw them beat the Clippers last night, but the Jazz will play everybody tough this year in the playoffs. And I don't know how far they advance, but I don't think there's going to be a bad playoff series for the Jazz this year. I just think the Jazz are good. I think they've got good coaching, and I think they're versatile enough that they'll be a tough matchup for whoever they play.
And it is a good sign that they have been playing well on the road.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that's what it is really tough in the playoffs, is getting those wins on the road. And obviously you want home court advantage. You'd like them to be playing a little bit better at home right now.
Yeah.
But that's a good sign.
Yep. And you know what? I mean, you look back at the Jazz playoff wins that they've had in recent years, and I know they only really beat the Oklahoma City Thunder. That was kind of their most significant,
right,
even though they beat the Clippers with Gordon Hayward the year before that. Those have all come by getting wins on the road because the Jazz weren't starting with home court advantage. So you've got to be able to do that in the playoffs, certainly. And regardless of if you have home court advantage or not, you need to be able to win on the road. And the Jazz can certainly do that this year. And I think that's a good sign. Tough stretch coming up starting tonight with the Toronto Raptors. Now, the Jazz are facing the Raptors on the end of a four-game road trip. Maybe it's five games. I think it's a five-game West Coast road trip for the Raptors. They played last night in Sacramento. It was a tough game. It went down to the wire. It was the last couple of possessions before it was decided. They've been playing okay. The Raptors haven't been playing great basketball, but they've been playing okay. This is a nice setup for the Jazz to get a win. It reminds me a lot of that Miami team who the Jazz beat right before the All-Star break.
Yeah, and you know, we talked about a little bit with Quinn today at Shoot Around that, you know, it doesn't matter that this Raptors team doesn't have Kawhi because they played so well without. I mean, Kawhi didn't play a lot last season during the regular season.
Were
so they
64 games.
Yeah, they had a lot of experience playing without him. And so going into this season, I think it was a little bit naive of a lot of people to think that they weren't going to be a good team. And, you know, like Quinn said today, Pascal Siakam is just so impressive of a player. And Lowry has always been a good player for them. And so it's always a tough team to play. And the last time that they played them, it was really ugly.
Yep.
So it will be a good test today.
Yeah, maybe the worst performance for the Jazz all season.
You know,
they're down 40 at the half and lost by 20. I mean, the Suns' loss here in Salt Lake was really bad as well. But as far as just the Jazz had zero answers for what Toronto. I mean, the Suns' game was a trap game a little bit, I think, for the Jazz, and they absolutely no-showed. But it's not like it didn't seem like the Jazz could have figured it out. They just didn't. They didn't play well enough. Toronto, the Jazz just had zero idea on what to do to stop that team. It was a little shocking to watch in that game.
Yeah, and they're a team that switches things up a lot during the course of a game.
Yep.
And I think that during the early part of the season, the Jazz just they weren't cohesive enough to try to deal with or adapt to something like that in the middle of a game where a team might switch like from man to a zone defense and do it, you know, three possessions and then two possessions differently.
Yep.
I mean, they really switch things a lot. And so I don't think that they were ready for it at all. Hopefully right now they've got a little bit more chemistry and cohesiveness going into these, you know, the latter part of the season where if a team does implement that sort of a tactic against them, that they'll be able to adapt.
And I think that's where the real value of Mike Conley comes in. It's just a guy who is, more than anything, he just played so many games with the ball in his hands. He just understands what opposing defenses are doing. And because he's played, 1,000 games in his career or more, that he just says, okay, I've done this play 500 times.
And he's playing so well right now.
And he's playing so well right now. And I thought he really did it against Boston. He looked really comfortable. Just whatever they threw at him specifically as they tried to switch it up, he was just very comfortable attacking. And I think that's the advantage. I know a lot of people are saying, well, Donovan Mitchell's a point guard and let him be the point guard and bring Mike Conley off the bench and the Jazz are better that way. There's a lot of times I feel like you see Donovan Mitchell repeat the same mistakes against defenses that have confused him. And he figures it out the next game, you know, because he has to go back and look at film. Mike Conley doesn't have to look at film in game to figure out what's going wrong. I think that's just the experience that the Jazz don't have basically anywhere else when it comes to ball handlers on the team. So Mike Conley's ability to do that should help tonight against the Toronto Raptors as they mix it up. And that's why there is still a place in the NBA for these kind of true point guards that we've talked about.
Yeah, and that's the basic difference between a young player and a seasoned player.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, a guy like Donovan Mitchell is going to need a little bit of time, and he is going to have, I mean, the next 2-3 years are going to have a lot of days spent watching film so that he can learn from those things.
Right.
And it's just ingrained in Mike Conley.
Yeah. The other weird thing, obviously, going around the NBA, because it's going around the entire world, is how teams are dealing with coronavirus and Larry H. Miller. The organization is certainly starting to take some more approaches. They sent out a big email earlier today talking about what the what the teams are doing. I was able to talk to a couple of people who saw the memo actually that the NBA sent out to all the team owners, just saying, "Hey, this is our procedure." You know, they didn't talk specifically about canceling games. There was no conversation about the plan to do that or holding fans out of an arena. It never got to that point, but they did talk about, "Hey, this is, you know, the process of how we cancel games and who gets to make that decision." So clearly the NBA is at that point, and Quinn Snyder said this morning that the Jazz met with officials from the University of Utah, you know, some of their health department, and just talked about what the team can do. So it's very clearly hovering over everything everybody's doing in our lives and your lives listening, and then, of course, it's happening in sports as well.
Yeah, and the Jazz, like most of the teams in the NBA, in that statement that the Larry H. Miller Group released today on Monday, it's the same kind of preventative measures that are happening around the league. They're going to be like sanitizing seats, door handles, everything in all of the venues constantly, and just trying to, you know, cut down on variables that can be controlled. And like you said, it's kind of hovering over everything because we don't know what the next step is going to be.
Sure.
There is a conference call with league owners this evening sometime, and that's going to be sort of, I think, a little bit just building off of that memo that was sent earlier late last week. That's, you know, this is what we're going to do to prepare and just be ready for things to change.
Yeah. And it's strange in the NBA, if you really start to pay attention, you realize how quickly sickness passes player to player and media to media. I mean,
oh, yeah.
It travels team to team. Like, I remember in Orlando, I think the team was sick. The Jazz were playing an Orlando team, and some of the media members were sick. And it just came to Salt Lake, and it went to Louisiana. It just, like, it bounces around the league.
Yeah, I got it.
So quick. Yeah, right. I mean, and it's amazing to see how it happens, where all of a sudden everyone in the media across the league is sick.
Yeah,
and there was, it really spreads in a week.
And because these guys and the media, the players, the coaching staff, everyone, because we spend so much time around each other and in confined spaces also, it can just bounce back and forth for 1-2 weeks straight.
Right.
Like, there was a couple weeks straight stretch where it was exactly what you're talking about. Like, there was 3 or 4 players that were dealing with, you know, like upper respiratory issue, flu symptoms, stuff like that. Quinn lost his voice to the point where he couldn't even talk after games. And there was multiple media members that were sick also, myself included. And then, you know, you see guys in the locker room that they're not sick yet, but they're drinking like throat coat tea, trying to like stave off anything. It bounces around. And so it's hard to imagine a scenario where if something happened, it wouldn't be. I mean, if that were to happen, if someone were to like need to be quarantined, if one player or one coaching member or something.
Right.
It's going to be a huge response because it's so passable in the NBA.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. It's a weird part of the league that I don't think I paid attention to until I was so much closer to it.
Right.
Of just realizing, like, oh, the entire league gets sick together.
Yes.
Regardless of what it is, whatever happens to one team or one player happens to everybody in the league and everyone who covers it. So, you know, the preventative measures are certainly important, and it's something that the league needs to do. And it's bizarre, and it's kind of strange to deal with. Even today at shoot-around, we didn't get to go in where the team actually plays at the Zions Bank Basketball Center. We didn't get to go on the court, which we always do. They held it out where they hold kind of bigger press conferences, whether it's the end of the year or media day coming back.
Yeah, they set up a room.
Yeah, they set up a room and a desk, and Quinn Snyder and Rudy Gobert sat there and talked about it and kind of talked about what's going on with their team. And, you know, that's smart measures again, just in any little bit of space. And I hope they don't fall in love with that. It's easy to fall in love with that idea, and
I've seen it happen before. Teams fall in love with it, and then it becomes a situation. But I mean, right now, especially, you don't want a bunch of people standing around you with literally their hands in your face.
Yeah.
Like, that's the opposite of what the preventative measures are saying to do. So it makes sense that they're, you know, putting us in a room with sort of a podium situation instead.
I won't be at all surprised if we see this, and basically universally across the league, be what happens for the rest of the year.
Yeah, absolutely.
And just say, like, let's get to summer. Well, ideally, all of this will pass,
right?
You know, and then when we reconvene next year, everyone can get back to operating, you know, business as usual. But I won't be at all surprised if over the next few months, because there's, what, 20 games left in the regular season and the playoffs? I mean,
And there's no way for us to know what's going to happen.
Right. And I think that's what's so weird for everybody. It's just like, when does this end? Like, what?
Yeah.
Do we need a vaccine, or is it just going to kind of, you know, like, it's going to reach its peak of how many people are going to get it, and it's going to get quarantined off enough? And scary thing is, it just doesn't feel like we're close to that. It feels like we're just now starting to figure it out, that it's going to spread here.
Exactly.
Before it has. Not to spread panic. And I do think that's the other thing Quinn Snyder talked about today a lot, was, you know, to steal a line from FDR is the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. I mean, that's kind of what Quinn talked about, as what officials said, is you can't really control it. You don't need to panic about it. You don't need to be, you know,
freaking out. Education is the most important thing, right. And like just staying hygienic, which like I think we all should do.
Yeah.
Just in a general sense, we should all be washing our hands more anyways.
Yeah, right. Touching fewer surfaces.
Yeah.
Yeah. Trying to touch things less. So I thought that was interesting. And then another thing I thought, getting back to the actual floor itself, and it's something I've started to notice, and it involves, I think, specifically Mike Conley. But you look at how this year started, where for the first 22 games, you kind of had this roster together that was trying to figure each other out. And then Mike Conley goes down with a hamstring injury and misses whatever it was, 20 games, you know, in the middle of the year. And during that stretch, the Jazz cut Jeff Green. They trade for Jordan Clarkson. Jordan Clarkson ends up being way more important to the team than I think anyone expected or recognized he would. And then Mike Conley comes back, and then you're trying to refigure yourself out. It might be that the Jazz are only now, today, game 61 or whatever this is tonight, really figuring out what their roster is. And Quinn Snyder was talking about building continuity and you know, the importance of competing hard and playing hard every night, and that's absolutely important. But finally kind of figuring out what he wants his rotation to be, that might not happen until tonight or really against the Pistons. And the Pistons was a first because you weren't having Mike Conley play second nights of back-to-backs yet.
Right.
So this might be really starting tonight the beginning of what the actual rotation was designed to look like, and we just didn't get to see it for the first three quarters of the year.
Yeah, I think in sort of that string of events that you're talking about, what's important in there also is between the beginning of the season and until the trade deadline passes, and there's that section of time where like players are being bought out and they're on waivers. That's also an area where it's just a little bit of unknown for the coaching staff, because they don't know what kind of moves the front office is going to make.
Right.
I mean, they've got a general idea and they talk to them, and obviously, but there's still like, I don't know, are we going to get a different player? Are we going to be inserting someone else? And so there's a little bit of unknown that you're constantly working with, and the players feel that too.
Sure.
They know that something could be moved and something could change, you know, at the drop of a pat. So right, as you're saying, right now it's like, this is what we're dealing with, this is what we have moving forward, and now they can actually start to feel like we'll build on everything that we actually have.
And you know, players talk about that all the time. It's just like, when you finally have a coach who settles into what he wants to do, and the players know, hey, I'm supposed to sub into the game at this point, and I'm going to sub out of the game at this point, and I'm not going to fight it. What that does and how much easier that makes your job when you just know what to expect every night allows you to focus on yourself as a team and not just worry about or allows you to kind of be done, I should say, focusing on yourself, because you've figured it out. Now you can worry about what other teams are doing and kind of look outward instead of just trying to say, hey, we're trying to solve these chemistry issues. We're trying to get settled. Now the Jazz know who their 9-man rotation is. I don't think that's going to change at all for the rest of the year. You're not going to see Ed Davis sneak back in at all. You know, I think it's Tony Bradley's job, and that was a smart move. I think the Mike Conley substitution pattern is kind of finally settled in, where he's the first sub out of the game, which Quinn Snyder tried to do at the beginning of the year and then changed that to Donovan Mitchell. And, you know, they just finally got there. And I think that's actually going to pay pretty huge dividends the rest of the year, because they've just been inconsistent. And I think because the lineups have been so inconsistent, that's been part of the problem.
Yeah. And like Mike Conley's injury definitely affected that too, because not only was it not on back-to-backs, and so you change the substitution on any game that you have on a back-to-back, but it's also, you know, there were games where you're managing his minutes too, even after he came back.
Right.
And so there's so many things that went into different rotational patterns and what minute mark somebody's going to come in. And now we're seeing it where he has a little bit more figured out, Quinn does. And not only is, you know, Mike that sub that comes in, and he's got really good chemistry with the guys that are actually in the second unit, but Quinn has it to where when he brings Ingles in, that he's playing with Gobert more,
right?
Which is exactly what you want. And so you're not seeing sort of things get flipped on its head to where, you know, guys are playing rotationally with players that they're not comfortable with. Now there's actually a comfortability factor.
The NBA is so funny. The Tony Bradley's ability to roll to the rim has totally changed the Jazz team. And it's like the silliest little skill. It's like one skill that's not that significant. It's not that important, but because he can do it, it's like rescued the Jazz second unit and Mike Conley and Joe. As a result, that one, his one ability to do that, which means he can play pick and roll with Mike Conley, allows Mike Conley to be in that second unit, which allows Joe Ingles to be in the starting unit for longer stretches or sub in first, which gets Joe Ingles going. I mean, it just one skill set has this butterfly effect that just has totally changed the Jazz team.
Yeah, and let's talk about Tony Bradley for a second, because I mean, his ability to do that, it's not by accident
right. At
all. I mean, you've been there in shoot-arounds and practices, and he works out on the basket that's closest to
us. Right next to us.
Yeah, when we're in the gym with them at Zion's. And he'll have a assistant coach or a player development coach that has, like, a big foam, like,
paddle. Yeah.
And he puts it, the coach will put the paddle up in front of the rim as if someone's trying to rim protect.
Right.
And Tony will roll to the rim, and he'll have to go up against that big foam paddle. And so he's literally practicing those exact moves. Yeah. And he's doing it, we watch him do it 30 times in a row.
Right.
And that's every time that he's in the gym. And so he knows that that's a situation that he's going to be in a lot. He knows that it's something he needs to get better at. And it's actually happening.
Yeah. Quickness off the floor, they work with him a lot. I mean, it's a lot of dunk, catch, dunk, catch, dunk, catch. I mean, it's trying to get him in shape, trying to get him to move a little bit quicker, but it's paying off. And it's kind of the tireless work behind the scenes that even, you know, we take it for granted. We see it all the time, but we take it for granted that it's just...
I think it's a really good sign that, you know, early in the year, you watch Tony Bradley, you try to do that, and he's not doing it.
No.
And the fact that within the span of a season, we've seen that much improvement from him, that's a really good sign for Tony Bradley for his improvement moving forward from this season.
Yeah, and it's crazy that, I mean, he's been on the bench. He'd played 12 games this year before going into this season. I think he played something like 12 total NBA games. Just crazy limited as a first-round pick to just have never really accomplished much. He just had not been on the floor. And for him to stay involved and for the Jazz to see that investment through, where the Sacramento Kings didn't pick up Harry Giles, his player option next year, or the team option next year on him. Like, they're already giving up on him, and now he's turned into a good player.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's going to go get money in the offseason, and the Kings have shot themselves in the foot once again.
Again.
The Jazz weren't playing Tony Bradley. The Jazz picked up his option for next year,
mm-hmm.
which at the time seemed weird, but they just said, you know what? Control over a guy is a good thing.
Yeah.
And then it's going to pay off because he's good, and you go into next season... You'll test the waters to see if, hey, someone wants to... And my guess would be they trade Ed Davis this offseason.
Yeah.
That would be the logical fit because he'll have value somewhere. And they'll see if they get a big back that can spread the floor. And, you know, they'll test the waters on some of these guys. But you don't feel bad next season with Tony Bradley coming in as your backup center.
No. And
you're confident with that.
Yeah. And there's up and down nights. You know, we'll see Tony Bradley play an amazing game. And then... There was, who did they play where that bench just came up huge for them?
Against Boston.
Yeah, that was Boston.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Tony Bradley was a huge part of that win.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the next game against Detroit, not great.
Yeah. Couldn't handle Christian Wood.
Yeah. And so you're going to see him have up and down nights because he's still a really green, raw player.
Yeah.
But the level of improvement that he's had after just playing 12 games before this season is impressive.
Yeah. It's also hard. Because you just have to be on the floor.
Yeah.
You have to find ways to get on the floor, which is why the G League is great. But there is still no replacement for NBA minutes.
No.
You know, Tony Bradley's going to dominate the G League with how big he is and the fact that he is so much more skilled and works with better players all the time with the Jazz. He's going to dominate the same way George Niang did.
Yep.
And then you get up to the NBA, it's just a different animal because everyone's bigger and faster and stronger and more talented.
And there's more defense.
And Tony just had to get in the rotation and get enough minutes that it mattered. And he kind of finally got that. And that becomes tough. And I've been guilty of it, of just saying, like, why not try Jarrell Brantley? Why not see if you can bring him up? It's just like, it's so hard to play in the NBA and find minutes to develop, even as good as you are in the G League. Rajon Tucker was amazing in the G League and could barely play in the NBA.
Yeah.
You know, so there's just funny, tough stretches. And it's hard to find minutes, especially for a team that's not trying to develop anymore. They're trying to be good. They're trying to win now. It's hard for those guys. So I think tip of the cap to Tony Bradley for putting up with it and seeing it through and sticking with it, and the Jazz for being smart for holding on to that investment and it paying off.
I also like how much he cares.
Yeah.
Because when we talk to him after games, like even on a good night after that Boston game when we talked to him, you could tell that he was still kind of – he's his harshest critic.
Yeah.
And so he was like, there's still things that I can do better. I know the mistakes. He's very hard on himself.
He's a very gentle person.
He is.
You know what I mean? Like, he's not delicate. Like, he's an NBA player. You have to be a crazy egomaniac,
right,
psychopath.
But he's sensitive.
Hard worker to get there.
But he's sensitive to the things, to his mistakes.
Yeah, he is. He's fun. He's been a fun story, actually. He's been one of many really good bright spots for this team. I know it's easy for Jazz fans to focus on, like, Rudy's kind of, I think, had a weird down stretch in the middle of the year.
Yeah.
And I think that's because teams are adjusting on how they're defending in the NBA. It's not just Rudy. It's everybody in the league.
Or, like, shooting slumps from Joe or
shooting
Bojan.
Yeah, and Joe's probably been maybe the biggest disappointment this year, or Mike Conley. I mean, I think it's fair to say that, even though I think the Mike stuff is just misunderstanding of who Mike Conley was, what Jazz fans expected him to be versus who he actually has always been.
And missing kind of, like, the non-tangible things that he adds when he's on the floor.
Right.
So.
Right. And then the 20 games in the middle. But the bright spots have been Bojan Bogdanović has been insane.
Mm-hmm.
He's so good.
He was so good
against Detroit.
Yeah.
And other than, you know, five games coming back from the All-Star break, he's just been incredible all season long. Donovan's had another very good year. But there have been some great stories. Like, Jordan Clarkson's been a phenom and has really broken out with this team. And then Tony Bradley's another bright spot. So there have been some really fun things, I think, with this team as well. All right, that'll do it for the Jazz Notes podcast. She's Sarah Todd, reader in the Deseret News. Find her on Twitter at NBA Sarah. You can find me on Twitter at Ben's Hoops. Read me at KSLSports.com. Catch up with us again later this week for another episode of the Jazz Notes podcast.